Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, with a goal of donating 30,000 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank this November. Learn more at leeauto.com.
It's Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, joined this morning by Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about the new legislature, which has now selected its leadership. The official votes, of course, will have to be taken when the lawmakers actually convene in early December. But Mal, any surprises in the choices that they've been making?
Not really, because what you had was pretty much leaders from the past session moving forward. Like, for example, Senator Timberlake, who was the assistant leader on the Senate side, is now the minority leader. Ryan Fecteau did have opposition to become Speaker of the House, but it was last minute and, shall we say, wasn't exactly well organized. Kathy Dillingham is back as the minority leader again in the House. Troy Jackson, Senate President, the Democratic leadership on the Senate side is exactly the same as it is now. And of course, because of the term limit situation on the Democratic side, you not only have a new speaker, but you have a new majority leader, Michelle Dunphy from Old Town, and Rachel Talbot Ross from Portland as the assistant majority leader.
You know, I'm curious, you were mentioning that Ryan Fecteau, who's been nominated for speaker, had a challenge. Was it at all philosophically based?
I don't think so. It was Seth Berry from Bodenham, who, of course, had served as majority leader in a past session. And he basically, in his speech, said, I kind of decided at the last minute that I ought to run, so I did. That's not how you get elected to leadership posts in the legislature.
This is kind of an old saw that's been trotted out every now and then against term limits, is the whole question of, because you have term limits, because people are forced out of their positions after four terms, do these new leaders that have moved up have enough experience to be really effective?
That's a good question, Erwin. I mean, that's especially true in the House of Representatives with Ryan Fecteau, who's 28 years old. And So it'll be a test for him for sure, especially since his leadership team is comprised of people that are older than him. I don't know how that dynamic works itself out. And I think it's going to be an especially acute challenge for Fecteau because of just how difficult the session is going to be. Just from a logistical standpoint, for example, that's a problem because not only do they have to get their work done, they have to do it in such a way that the public can observe it and also participate in it. Like we've obviously had the legislature, the current legislature that will be, you know, we replaced come December 2nd, had meetings during the pandemic over the summer where they were able to have stakeholder meetings or the racial commission or the judiciary committee. But those were less public hearings where the public doesn't participate, where people aren't necessarily invited to attend. That's different when you have 1,000 bills or more coming up. That's setting aside the political dynamics here, which are going to be extremely difficult. This is going to be a brutal budget. You know, because of the pandemic, revenues are not where they, you know, would have been if not for the pandemic. There's going to be all kinds of proposals to try to help people. And even in normal times, those proposals are not necessarily agreed upon by both parties. As a young speaker at 28 years old, that's going to be a challenge for Ryan Fecteau. And we'll have to, you know, evaluate to see how he does that and how he does it with that new leadership team that Mal just laid out for us.
Yeah, there's going to be a big difference in terms of experience. As Steve was pointing out, the majority leader in the House, Michelle Dunphy, has had experience chairing a committee. She's had experience on appropriations. And on the Republican side, you have Dillingham back for another term, but you also have Jeff Timberlake, who's not only back for another term in leadership, but was on the Appropriations Committee when he was in the House of Representatives. So he has a long history of experience in terms of dealing with the principal issue of this session, which is going to be the budget.
And it really will, as you say, Mal, it's going to depend on what Congress does in a lot of ways, because as I recall, the projection is if Congress were to do nothing, the next biennial budget is something like $800 million to $1 billion out of whack. That's enormous for the state of Maine.
It's just huge. And, you know, again, that means there's going to be some difficult decisions that need to be made. One thing I just want to add real quick about Ryan Fecteau that I just thought of as you guys were talking about the budget, which is one thing he will bring to the speaker's role that may be of some benefit given all the problems that we had with the unemployment system over the summer. Mm. Is some experience in that arena because he was served on the labor committee and he's ostensibly familiar with the workings of that system and may be able to put out a bill. He would certainly have the clout, I guess, to put forward a bill that might deal with some of the deficiencies we saw with that program. A lot of those were, of course, driven by this explosion in demand for the benefits, but there was also the additional layering on top of a brand new benefits program for gig workers, you know, the people who are self-employed, who are typically excluded from unemployment benefits, layering that on top of a program that was also being, you know, just pounded with people seeking help. It was a very trying time for the Labor Department, and they were under the microscope. They were not able to get people's benefits processed in an expeditious way when they needed them. You could see a proposal right out of the gate to try to at least examine some of the deficiencies in the program. We're going to need a good, robust unemployment system, at least for another year, and if not longer, depending on how long this economic devastation lasts.
And what gets lost in all of the use of federal money was a huge amount of that. I believe it was like $350 million that came in was used to bail out the unemployment system so employers would not have to pay for an increase in the unemployment tax. Well, that money's been used. So that really means that going forward, probably next year, if there's not additional federal aid coming down in that front, then you're going to see employers at the time they're trying to recover being hit with substantial increases in the unemployment tax. There's so many moving parts here that are going to rely on what Congress does that it's going to make life absolutely miserable for the governor and the legislature as they try to put a package together that will hold and will actually provide the basis for an economic recovery.
So beyond the pandemic, if there is such a thing as beyond the pandemic, are there any other major areas the next legislative session needs to tackle?
The study of the criminal indigence legal services program and all of its issues now, in terms of when you talk about the size of the budget and the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars there, we're still talking about some very difficult decisions as to whether we phase in a public defender system, have that increase of several million dollars, whether they try to fix the system that's in place now, which again will take additional funding. If they don't fix the criminal indigent defense system, they're going to get sued. And it's clear from what's happened in other states, it's not going to be pleasant.
What about any major piece of legislation on energy or environmental matters? Perhaps something left over from the last session?
Honestly, I mean, a lot of that stuff has a price tag. I just see the pandemic and the economic situation and the budget really crowding out and sucking up a lot of the oxygen out of the session, because it's just there's so much need out there as we speak. I mean, we've seen lines of people waiting for food in places where we have not seen that before, people seeking rental assistance, et cetera. I just think that they're not going to have much choice but to really focus on those issues, at least in the near term. And then maybe some of these other things might be taken up in the second part of the session next year.
Well, let's turn to a little political speculation here. We heard that Maine Senator Angus King is being considered for Director of National Intelligence. And in fact, King's office has confirmed that. If President-elect Biden were to choose him, that would obviously open up a Senate seat and roil the political waters considerably. Now, first, let's talk about what happens kind of from a technical point of view if King steps down from the Senate.
There will be a special election in 2 years to fill out the rest of his term. In the interim, the governor gets to appoint a senator to fill that slot. Now, the question becomes, does the governor fill that slot with someone who's a caretaker, who is just there to hold the seat for 2 years and let the politics fall as they may in 2 years? Or is she going to give somebody a leg up, a la Joe Brennan giving the Senate seat to George Mitchell mm-hmm. when Edmund Muskie became Secretary of State. We don't know where she's going to go with that. And it's all speculation now. King is one of several people under consideration. He's not like the number one on the list of folks that are being considered. He, as I've been told, he's on the list. Well, Shelley Pingree, and our first district congresswoman, is also on the list to be agriculture secretary. Again, she's not the first person on the list, but she is on the list and she is under consideration. Lots of moving parts here, depending upon what President-elect Biden decides to do.
It's fun to play the game, though, a little bit, mm-hmm. right? To imagine who might Governor Mills pick. And there's a lot of candidates, right? I mean, some people have speculated that, you know, she could pick Sarah Gideon, who just lost an election to Susan Collins. I don't know if the governor would do that necessarily, but that's a name that's been floated out there. Shelley Pingree's name has been floated out there. Jared Golden's name has been floated out there for the reason being that, you know, he outperformed the president and Sarah Gideon in the second congressional district and has sort of branded himself as a moderate in the Susan Collins type style, only he happens to be a Democrat and, you know, might actually have a chance of winning a statewide race in Maine, which is a hard thing for Democrats to do if they're from the southern part of the state or the first congressional district. Let's just pretend that Governor Mills picks Jared Golden and gives him a 2-year head start to run on a Senate campaign in 2024. That means Democrats would need to figure out who they want to run in Golden's seat in the second congressional district. The bench is pretty, you know, it's pretty thin for the Democrats and the Republicans, frankly. I mean, maybe Matt Dunlap, who's retiring as the Secretary of State, might run for the second congressional district if Jared Golden was yanked out to run for the Senate. Who knows? But it is fun to think about it. And it's one of those rare things that we get to deal with in Maine. One thing we'll add about the idea that Sarah Gideon would be put into this interim position and to be allowed to run in 2024, that's a lot like what happened when John McCain died in Arizona and Martha McSally was appointed by the governor to hold that seat. McSally, of course, just lost pretty convincingly. It would be interesting to see the reaction, I think, from Maine voters if Sarah Gideon was picked for that spot, given that she just got beat after a very well-financed campaign here. And if Janet Mills has to make that decision, I'm sure she's going to have a lot of people giving her advice about how to do it.
Just to be clear, the governor would be appointing a senator to fill until the next general election, that is in 2022. And then because of the way the Senate terms are staggered, that individual would have to run again in 2024. It's a little bit like what members of the U.S. House kind of face, which would be kind of an almost permanent campaign for 4 years, which is unusual for a senator to have to do.
Absolutely.
Well, that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. My thanks to Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler, Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. A reminder that Maine's Political Pulse podcast is updated each Friday. You can hear most of it on Weekend Edition Sunday on Maine Public Radio. You'll hear an excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition program. Also, don't forget the Maine Political Pulse newsletter that Steve Missler puts together. That is available Friday mornings, and you can sign up to have it emailed to you. Just go to our website, mainepublic.org. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. All of us wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. Political Pulse will take next Friday off, so we'll talk with you again in a couple of weeks.